You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, along with Jay Gonzalez, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. Welcome to Thursday's day of fun. I'm thinking we're going to have fun.
I hope we're going to have fun. I'm really excited to talk to our guest today, Bob Baffert. I've been a horse racing fan as long as I can remember. Not enough to, you know, go to a major track every year, but enough to pay attention to it and watch all the Triple Crown races. And so I'm anxious to talk to Bob.
Yeah, I can't wait to do it. He's one of my, I don't know if hero is the right word because I'm a sports guy, but he was my first guest on my first show on this show.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, because I wanted to talk to him for a while. We got into some good stuff. We're going to talk about some good stuff now. A lot of good things are going on for the Bob Baffert clan. So what are you doing in 11 years?
Well, I hope I'm above ground. I mean, that's all I got right now. I got something to shoot for now.
Can I get you a cane or something?
Something, man. I got to get myself in shape now. I've got something to play for. We heard the announcement. Arizona's going to be playing Alabama in 2032 and 2033.
We had Greg Byrne on and he couldn't break it to us.
Well, you know, I'm disappointed in him that he didn't break it on our show because, you know, we broke some news when Adia Barnes announced her impending the birth of a daughter. But I'm disappointed in us because neither one of us thought to say, so Greg, when are you going to get Arizona and Alabama together?
Right.
It's such an obvious question, and I don't know why we didn't ask
it. You know what he would have done.
It would have been interesting. You know, if he would have stuttered a little bit, maybe hesitated or something, we might have known something was up.
Right. I'll get back to you that on Jay. Jay, we'll get back to you on that.
You know, something like that, you know. But knowing Greg, he would have played it pretty cool. But, you know, this is...
Let me ask you, do you think it's a big deal?
Well, yeah, it is a big deal. It's a long way off, but it is a big deal because, you know, I go back to the days when, you know, we would hear that these games were coming up way into the future. Right. You know, Arizona had series with Ohio State. They played LSU a couple of times. Played Michigan back
Notre
in the...
Notre Dame.
You know, those games with Notre Dame, and you would hear about those games 5, 6, 7, 8 years ahead of time, and they seemed so far off, then all of a sudden they were here, mm-hmm. right? And so just because I'm 60 years old and, you know, this game's going to be, you know, I'm going to be 72 when this game rolls around, it's a little different perspective for me. But if I was 25 years old, I'd be thinking, great, you know, this game's going to be coming up at a time when, you know, I'm still a fan and all that type of stuff. Look, somebody made the point. The guys who are going to be playing in that game are in elementary school right now. So for us to think
that we have
any idea what that's going to be. But still, when you think about the fact that Arizona's playing Alabama in the future, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Save money now. We can go to the first game over there.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, I saw you and one of your buddies on Facebook talking about, you know, we got to get the gas money road trip. I'm like, Steve, you might be in a nursing home by that time.
I'm definitely not driving.
Exactly. You're going to need a ride.
Driving Miss Daisy to Alabama.
You know,
are we there yet?
Again, it's just, you know, these things do get scheduled so far out ahead that they're fun to talk about. You know, I'm not all that excited about it yet. You know, if I'm 70 and I'm still healthy and I know I've got a couple of good years in me, I'll start getting fired up for that.
Have a little fun with this. Saban will still be the coach there. How many coaches will U of A have gone through?
I think Saban will be retired by that time.
I'm kind of joking.
You know, but somebody put an over-under of 2.5 coaches.
Oh, that's a good number.
For Arizona by that time.
12 years, 2.5 coaches.
You know, I was mean and I put an over-under of 2.5 of how many of the Gonzalez brothers will still be around by that time.
Right.
And somebody said, if you take the under, you're a bad man. So
that's not a bad bet. 2.5 coaches? 2.5?
Well, you know, if you think about,
years.
You know, I mean, I think we're in a situation, seriously, where Kevin Sumlin's got to get some things together.
Wait, does he count?
He counts.
Oh, then that's over.
He's won. Okay.
Over.
So if he's got, let's say he has, you know, sticks around for maybe 5 years because he gets this thing going, you know, then the then it may be the under. But if, let's say, he has another really bad year and he's gone next year or right after that, then you're thinking the over. So I don't know where I am right now.
I reached into my pocket. I'm betting the over right now.
So I don't know. That's a tough call. You know, I'm rooting for him, and because I'm rooting for the Cats. You know, I'll know more in a couple of months, maybe.
You'll know by December.
It doesn't look good right now. If you were to put a knife to my throat and say you got to take one or the other right now, I'm taking the over.
The over, yes. Smart man.
But you know, it's fun. I mean, you know, these things are fun to talk about. You know, I was looking at the non-conference schedule over the next few years, and you know, you can kind of tell Arizona's up the game a little bit. You know, when Mike Stoops was here, we had some of those games. Mm-hmm. We had Iowa. We played, you know, had home and homes with Iowa, home and homes with Oklahoma State. Rich Rod got the second half of that one.
That was an unbelievable game.
That was a great game. You know, Rich Rod's first year. Mm-hmm. So you know, Arizona played Ohio State and Dick Tomey's mm-hmm. last year, and mm-hmm. that was a great game. Arizona lost, but it was a really good game.
We talked about the Oklahoma game back in the late 80s. You
right,
and I
they
were
had
there.
Oh, home and home with Oklahoma back in the day, and again there was the Notre Dame one. You know, they came and played here in Larry Smith's first year, 1980. Then went back there in 82, and then Arizona beat them. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was mm-hmm. one of the historic games, one of the landmark games of the time, Larry Smith's time here. You know, it still sticks in my, you know, in my brain as, you know, that what a great game that was.
Right. Let me throw a curve real quick. We have about 2 minutes left in this segment before we talk to Bob Baffert. When was the last time you lost $4 billion?
I don't even know what that looks like. But yeah, I saw that news. If there's no college football, Power Five teams with $4 billion. They said on average, $62 million per school.
Yeah.
And I know it's not that much for Arizona, because Arizona generates a large amount of its revenue from basketball, yeah. one of the higher end ones. But I think Arizona's still in the $50 million range mm-hmm. if it doesn't play football. That's why when Dave Hickey was talking the other day, he said, not playing football is not an option.
Right.
It's
right,
not
right.
an option.
Well, because it wipes out everything
it
else.
It wipes out everything else.
Yeah.
So much of everything relies on whether or not they have football. I mean, all of college athletics crumbles if there's no football.
And that doesn't include, well, obviously an audience, but you were talking about this yesterday or the day before, how people were talking, or at least one source said that they could survive on the TV.
Right. So, yeah, somebody said that the Kansas State athletic director said that TV revenue would allow the programs to survive if you had to play games with no fans. And so that's why I say they're going to play the games.
Yeah.
There may be some adjustments as to when and whether or not they're going to be fans, but they have to play the games.
Yeah. Okay. With that, we're going to take a quick break, get a hold of Bob Baffert, and talk sports horse racing here on 1030 The Voice.
Time to update those old kitchen cabinets? Call the Window Depot today. The Window Depot is not only the number one warehouse for windows and doors, we now have a great selection of kitchen and bath cabinets at Tucson's best prices. The Window Depot is Tucson's top spot for granite and quartz countertops to finish the new kitchen or the replacement of that old worn out Formica. So call us today at 290-8545 or 622-6430. The Window Depot, windows, doors, granite, and new kitchens.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. And now on the phone, we have the esteemed Bob Baffert. Bob, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great, great. What's for dinner? I hear you're cooking.
Well, my job is to make the rice, but I'm having a little bit of trouble with it, the cooker. She's got these fancy stoves there, and I don't know how to work them. So I got to figure it out.
Okay. Hey, so I was telling Jay, you were my first guest on my first show about 18 months ago. Welcome back. How's having horse racing back at Santa Anita for you?
Oh, you know, it's so good to have it back. I was really worried there for a little bit. And, you know, there's a lot of jobs back there that were at risk. But, you know, we got it going. It's still, you know, the owners can't come out, no fans. And so it's not the same. So, you know, until we get, you know, maybe in a maybe phase, whatever they call it, maybe once the restaurants open up, maybe we might get some more action.
Hi, Bob. This is Jay Gonzalez. It's a pleasure to meet you. So tell us what your thoughts are on the Triple Crown races. You know, it's backwards. You got Belmont. It's not the same Belmont. I mean, how's that going to work for you guys?
Well, I think it's going to be, I think the Belmont, there'll be some good horses in there. They won't have them all in there. But it's different, but I'm just, I think we're just happy that they're even having them, because it was looking pretty bleak there a couple months ago, like it wasn't going to happen. And you just worry about, what are you going to do with these high-powered horses? You have, you got some really good horses, all this money into them, and you can't run those classics. So I think it's going to be the Preakness, if there's a horse that wins the first two, should be pretty exciting. But I think they're going to be very competitive races, because there's a lot of time in between, so it's not going to be like, usually after the Derby, the Preakness has about 10, 11 horses, and maybe one or two are decent. The rest are just running. So they're going to be pretty competitive.
So we've all known that Bob Baffert kind of owns the first week of May for the number of last years, and you did it again this year with two great bullets, one Nadal and Charlatan. Those two look pretty good for the Triple Crown this year.
No, they're really good horses. I have three really good horses right now. I have those two. And I have Authentic, who's going to be running June 6th in Santa Anita Derby, who's a really good horse too. So it's fun, but it's unfortunate. I had them right on schedule for the May race, but we just got to deal with what you have.
So how does preparation change for these races? Because when you had, in with the old scheduling, you had three, these three races were compressed pretty tightly. Now you've got this gap. So what do you do different in terms of getting the horses ready for these races?
Well, I just backed off on some of them, so I just sort of go backwards from those dates. Mainly, we go back from the Kentucky Derby, which is the main race that we're looking at. So what we do is that's going to be running September the 5th. So what I do is I back it up to make sure they'll have a race before that, prep them. So we want September 5th is going to be like that's the big kahuna, so we're all looking at that. And then for the Preakness is like a month later. So, whichever ones are fitting that one, we'll run.
How does that affect the breeders in a month after that?
I don't think it's going to have a big effect on it, because they would have had a prep race in October anyway. So the older horses, the three-year-olds won't run against the older horses until the Breeders' Cup.
Go ahead.
It's a long year too, because you have to keep them healthy, just like these teams, and you got to keep your horses healthy. So that's we got a long way to go.
So we had Steve Kerr earlier this week talking, about the Chicago Bulls and his success with the Warriors. And I'm telling Jay here, I says, I don't know if I'd want to come back as Steve Kerr for a weekend or Bob Baffert for a weekend. What a weekend that would be. And then I said to myself, here's a guy who has maximum security now in his barn. How's that been?
Yeah, we just got him in a few weeks ago. He looks good. I mean, he came in good shape, and poor horse is, he's got some bad press behind him, but we're going to get him going, and hopefully you'll see him at Del Mar. Maybe he'll run there or out of town. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with him yet, but I'm just trying to figure him out. He'd been turned out, so he was on vacation for about 45 days, and so we're getting him ready. But I have some other older horses, like McKenzie.
Yes.
He's coming back. He's going to be running June 6th. He's getting ready to make a big stand this summer, and looks fantastic.
I had McKenzie. I think we talked about this. I had McKenzie before I had Justify, and then when they had to shelve McKenzie, well, where am I going to go but Justify?
I'm telling you what, McKenzie, when I really thought I was going to win the Kentucky Derby with him, and then he got hurt, and just luckily, Justify, he was like a walk-on, and he breaks his maid, and he just carried the water. But what a horse he was. 112 days to do that, that's, you'll never see that again. It was incredible.
Okay, so Bob, so I followed horse racing for a long time, and in fact, I read the book about Secretariat, and I was fascinated by the whole bloodlines and breeding process, and how, you know, that book went all the way back to the very beginning, and how Secretariat came about. So I've got a few extra bucks. I want to get a horse. How does somebody get Bob Baffert to train their horse? What's the process for that?
Well, I mean, I still take owners, you know, new clients, and they, you know, it depends what you're, you know, there's some guys that are, if I deal with like high end races, and that doesn't mean the horse has to be a certain price or whatever. You can, you know, I've won the Derby with $17,000 horses, but usually clients that want to play at the top end, you know, they want to, you know, so they usually, you know, they want to buy horses that are pretty well bred, and because where the money is made is in the sale ring. Like these horses, like a horse like Mackenzie, and you buy them, you know, they, you know, you bought him for $170,000, but he's worth, you know, $12-15 million when they do well, and that's where a lot of these guys make, you know, it's amazing the money for the, it's in the breeding rights of these horses. And so that's why you might spend ridiculous money, but you're going to get it back. And so
wasn't the $17,000 horse the real Quiets of the world?
Yeah, he was $17,000, which was, you know, it's hard to, I mean, Silver Charm, he was $80,000.
Yeah.
And he made about, I think he made like $7 million or some ridiculous amount. Right. But, you know, it's, and then they sold him for $10 million. So it's one of those things where, you know, you, if you deal in the high-end stuff, you can make it. You know, but then there's another level of just having fun and buying a horse and watching it run and break its mane, or breed, you can breed it and buy a mare. And, you know, that's the long haul. That's sort of a tougher, you know, you get lucky California Chrome, you know, these guys like,
yeah,
they bought the mare for $8,000 and they breed it to a stallion there for $2,500 or whatever. And they get this great horse, you know. So there's different ways of getting there.
Speaking of all that, you have two great clients, at least friends of mine, the Carboys. Do they have any bullets this year? Any guys?
The boys, those are the best guys. Yeah, Paul Whiteman, Carl Watson, you know, Watson Chevrolet, and Paul Whiteman, Buick. They own Mackenzie. They got Mackenzie, and they've got they've got a nice horses coming up, and some 2-year-olds. So, you know, they had Looking at Lucky to win the Preakness, and he should have won the Derby, but he got a really bad trip.
Mm-hmm. And they've had you with some great names. Obviously Midnight Lute, the fastest horse around at that day. Candrea, Hot Sean. There might be
Hot
another.
Hot Sean was a little bit of a disappointment.
no comment. No comment.
Candrea, he was okay. I said Midnight Lute, he was like, you know, he was. He ran like his namesake, you know. He was a champion, and but it's really it's fun, you know. I met him through my brother Bill, the yes. real estate. Mm-hmm. He should be mayor of Tucson, and you know, Bill brought him to me. I got these great guys. They're a lot of fun. You know, they're a lot of fun. Right. Most of my clients, they're in it, you know, they want to compete at the top end, but they want to have fun, you know, they really enjoy it. They have a lot of passion for it, because a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, there's, you know, you lose more than you win, so you better have the heart for it.
Well, we all know that.
I know all about that. I really know all about that.
Well, he also had one called The Stoops. If you're going to put Hutchon in that box, how was The Stoops?
Hey, The Stoops did great. We bought him for, I think we only gave like $90,000 for him.
Only $90,000.
Yeah, but for a thoroughbred, and he made like, I want to say he made about $600,000. I think they sold him for like $2 million. It was ridiculous, you know. But they, but Stoops has been in Midnight Lute. They were big, and Looking at Lucky was named after Carl Watson. Great story. He's with Mike Pegram, and they're going to be partners. And they were having a party. It was somebody's birthday. We were at Carl's house. And he told Mike, he says, and he had a few little toddies there. And he said, Mike, I know you've been lucky. You've won a lot of big races, but you're Looking at Lucky right here. And Mike Pegram said, we got to name a horse.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's how he got his That's how he got his name.
And over the last few years, some of the best years in your life, obviously, with American Pharoah, Justify. I mean, come on, how did this kid from Nogales become this guy? I'm sorry, got you in the wrong area.
No, I used to rent at Douglas. Believe me, I like Douglas. Okay.
But it's
one of those things where, I never thought of it as my father's dream, you know, and so he loved horses and he had a passion for it, and I just had to be at a young age, and I went with him, and I remember the first track I went to was Sonoyta, Arizona. That, to me, that was the first Saturday in May. That was our derby, to be at Sonoyta. And then going to Rialto every weekend with him when I was like 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, and hanging out there and, you know, seeing all these old timers and stuff. So, you know, Rialto has that's where I got started. And, every time I go to Tucson, I always drive by there just to check it out, a little nostalgia and get out and look at it. Arizona, Prescott, Arizona, all those little
King.
I used to hit all those little places, man. It was a dirt road to the Derby.
At what point, Bob, was this going to become a job, a life for you? I mean, I know you went to the U of A and went through the horse racing program there, but, at some point you decided this is what I'm going to do.
I was 27 years old when I decided that's what I was going to do. I tried to be a jockey first when I was, 18, 19, and I was too big and I just wasn't good enough, and I toyed with it, went to school. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then finally at 27, I decided, I'm going to do this. And so I started out. My dad set me up, and he had a few horses. And I just started with one horse and built itself up. Pretty soon I had and Rialto had like 40 horses there.
Yeah.
And so, right on the weekend, it was just a lot of fun growing up in Tucson.
Bill, Bob, can you stick around after the break? Talk about the good old days?
Sure.
Let's do that. Let's just take a quick break here on 1030 The Voice.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll free at 888-881-5765.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. And now on the phone, we still have Bob Baffert. Bob, real quick, we have a guy on the name is Joe. I think there's some connection. Joe, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Fine, thank you. You have a quick question?
Yeah. Honored to speak with you, Mr. Baffert. My name is Joby Rapola. I'm not sure if you remember my dad from the fair circuit. And from me working in the jocks room and at Rialto, and
you were running
horses, and I was working in the jocks room. This was probably 35-ish years ago, and we would travel all around the fair circuit to Sonoyta, to Prescott. We'd run in Prescott all summer long, and just growing up around the track and just watching your career flourish as it is, it's just been a complete honor. And I've always told people, I used to know that guy when he ran on the fair circuit with these $1,500, $2,500 claimers.
That was me. I hit them all and we ran for I remember the purse was like $600. I remember winning a purse of $300, and my 10% was $30. I mean, I had to go to Jack in the Box to celebrate.
Yeah, those were some great memories. I still go out to Rialto and look at those grounds and kind of think about the races that I've seen there, some of the match races and things like that. It's just amazing. So again, it's an honor to watch your career flourish as it is, and just go into the absolute top of the game.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Joby. Really appreciate it. So Bob, you have a lot of connections to the Tucson area, obviously Southern Arizona. You were here not too long ago to watch a game, you and Billy in the front row with the Bob Uecker seats. How was that?
That was, you know, that's the first time I've ever sat on the floor, and it was just a great experience. My brother Bill, he's always sitting there, and so I happened to be there for that university symposium. So you know, I was there that night, and Todd Pletcher, he was there and hung out with the president there at halftime and stuff, and the athletic director. So it's pretty cool to go back there. I remember going to school. I used to get in line when they had in the old Bear Down Gym, the old Fred Snowden. Mm-hmm. Fred Snowden, they used to line up to get tickets. But it was pretty cool to be there. I got to be like a top dog there for a little bit.
like Billy every game.
Yeah, you know, you're in good company there. You know, you see the president there, President Robbins is there, Terry Francona's got seats there. So, you know, you're in high company right there.
No, it's pretty cool, but because you know when you're that close, it's a totally different. As a matter of fact, you know, I thought, man, I've never sat on the floor before, so that was and I had it. And my brother Bill, he's the one that had to set it up for me.
It's a completely different game from down there, Bob. So you mentioned Todd Pletcher, you know, another U of A guy. Are there a lot of U of A people running around in the industry, guys who have come out of the program? You know, do you know who they are? Do you see them? Is there any camaraderie there? You know, Steve Kerr was talking about that from an NBA standpoint. Are there a lot of folks in the industry?
Yeah. There's quite a few. They, you know, a lot of them are in the office management, racing secretaries, different. They'll come up to me and they'll say, "Hey, you know, Wildcat," you know, and right away they get my attention, you know. So, you know, everywhere I go, they'll come up to me and say, "Hey, Bear Down" or something like that. So, to the crowd, but it's got a lot of people that have come through that. It's a pretty good. Pretty good system they have there. They pump out a lot of people that work in racing.
So the last time we talked, I said at the time, I think that the Steve Kerr was out in the news a lot. He's still kind of out there. And I was thinking, who else? Well, Bob Baffert. You guys are kind of the Mount Rushmore of today because you're still out there doing and working your magic. Steve Kerr, you know, Sean is doing what he's doing. There's no pressure in that, I'm sure, but it's kind of cool that a U of A guy is out there on the forefront.
Steve Kerr, you know, I run into him once in a while at like Del Mar during the summer. And he's the nicest guy. He's very approachable, and he knows, you know, he knows Paul Whiteman and Carl Watson. But you know, he's always been, you know, he's always the same guy. You know, he's had all those championship teams and all. But you know, what a great coach. You know, he was a great player. I remember watching him play, and then to end up a great coach. You know, that's pretty tough.
Bob, I promised my brother Ed I would tell this story, and he was at American Pharoah's first win at Del Mar, and actually bet on him in a Quinella. Now the Quinella didn't come in because American Pharoah came in, but the other horse did not. But after American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, I mean, like the next day, he comes over to my house. He's got the picture that he took because he was sitting at the finish line. He's still got the program, and he's still got the losing ticket. And I had to make this frame thing for him that he's got on his wall. So I told him I would be sure to tell you that story. But this is a roundabout way of asking you this question. When do you know you've got an elite horse like that? We were talking the other day about kids and, you know, they're athletes and they separate themselves from the other kids because they're so much better. But when do you recognize that you've got an American Pharoah or a Justify or a Kentucky Derby winner? How do you know that?
You know what? They'll tip you off just like any great athlete. Before we run them, when we start going past a half a mile, breezing them, working them like 5/8 of a mile, all of a sudden, the really good ones, they don't get tired. They just keep going, and they do it effortlessly. And he showed a lot, but the first time I ran him, he sort of fell apart. He didn't run well at all. He was just a mess in the paddock. He got nervous. He got hot. He just was agitated, broke horribly, came out, was right there briefly on the and just stop running and. And you tell your brother that I was not there when he won that race.
He'll be disappointed.
I had moved back. I was going to drive back down. He was in the fraternity, and I threw him in there. He was a maiden, and he drew the one, and I had to bring my son Bodie. He had to start school, so I had to be there for that his first day in school. And we were going to drive down, and the traffic is just so bad. You know, so I said, you know what, I'm just going to watch it. And he ran that day when the way he won, I knew right there, wow, this horse is a lot better than I thought. You know, I thought he was really good. He was a good horse, but that day he proved that. I knew that day he could win the Kentucky Derby. He just, and you know what, and Victor Espinoza, he picked the mound up that day too. It was a last minute thought to put him in that race. Yeah, and cause he'd run horrible the first time. So, he was, but my sister was there, who lives down there. She represented us in the winner's circle. Very small winner's circle.
Bob, I've got a question.
Your brother could have gotten in the picture. It wouldn't have mattered.
He's bummed that he was actually right there because he had some really great seats. It's a trip that he takes every year with a buddy of his that lives in the area, and they, you know, they get some really great seats. So he's got another picture of the horse in the winner's circle, and he's pretty close by. But the one I framed for him was the one of the horse crossing the finish line.
Hey, all you have to do is just, if you went to the USA, just come on down.
Don't do that. We're all going to be there.
I'll let him know. I'll let him know, and he's going to go be a pest.
Just say bear down.
Bob, I've got a question for you. You obviously have had a very storied career, and you've done a lot, but was there a moment for you, and you told the story earlier about, well, you tried to be a jockey and all that, but what made you fall in love with horses in the first place? What was it? Did you have an aha moment?
You know what, when I was about 12 years old, I was hanging around there. My father, he had this gelding that was off the racetrack. He'd won like couple of races. He wasn't that good, a quarter horse, and so I wanted to learn how to ride. So he gave me this horse that I could use him, and so he was really tough to ride, and he was tough. But and when I would get on him, he wouldn't go. He knew I was sort of scared of him. So it was one of these things where I just felt like I had to, you know, it was one of those things where I wanted to get him to respect me, and he knew it. And finally, one day, it took me about 6 months, and I finally got the nerve to really, you know, get after him and show him that who is the boss. And after that moment, I just fell in love with him. You know, I couldn't wait to see that horse every day. And so we just sort of bonded. His name was Baffert Teller, and he was just a beautiful horse, but that horse really is what got me into it, and just loved being around him. I mean, I'd come home from school, get on the bus, I just had to go brush him and take care of him. And so I bonded with that horse, and that made me really appreciate the horses, just their smell and just being around them, you know. But that horse really got me involved.
How cool was it a few years back when you were the guy for game day?
You know what? That of all the things I've done, that has got to be the most coolest thing ever. I mean, that was the way we went in there and being on there, being with those guys. They were just they were fun. You know, usually you get a little bit nervous or something like that, but they made me feel really at ease, and it was just something. You know, I wish I could have stayed there because I had to get back. I had some big races, but. It was fun to be with those guys. And to this day, Kirk Herbstreit, I talk to him all the time, and he actually owns a piece of a horse with us, you know. So
Nice.
So I see those guys once in a while, but that was pretty awesome. I mean, that experience was pretty awesome.
You didn't miss much. I think they got crushed by UCLA that day.
They got hammered.
That was no fun.
Yeah, so I wish they would have picked, you know, like UTEP or somebody that day. But
you know, in horse racing lingo, they never got out of the gate on that day.
That's one thing when I always tell everybody, like U of A, we used to go on some of those road trips. They always U of A was always like the homecoming game, like USC, something like that, you know?
Yeah. So you've had all these great horses. So this is a hypothetical, and I know it may be a tough answer, but War Emblem, the Pharaoh, obviously, and Justify, and Cavalier, Silver Charm, if they all ran against each other, how would they finish?
Well, it depends how far they would be going, but they're all different. They're all different. You know, Silver Charm was probably he was gritty. He loved competition. He was just like, he just wouldn't let anybody pass him, you know. And War Emblem, if he didn't have the lead, he'd get mad. He just wouldn't run. You know, he was different. He would get out there by himself. He was tough to catch. But of my Derby winners, I think American Pharaoh and Justify, they're like, those guys were, that's why they're Triple Crown winners. They're just a cut. They're superior animals. You know, they can handle all that. But they have that extra gear. And so when I led them up to the Belmont for the Triple Crown, you know, I knew, you know, there's always racing luck you have to worry about, but I knew if they got away from the gate clean, it was like, okay, bring them on. You know, it's like leading Michael Jordan up there. All right, just go dunk it, will you? You know, so, I knew I had them over the barrel, you know, if they got away clean.
Well, Bob, today I finally got around to watching that virtual Triple Crown, Kentucky Derby, and I'm like, how do you feel about the fact that they put American Pharaoh in fourth place? I mean, I get it. Secretariat was going to win that race, but what the heck?
You know what? I knew Secretariat had to win it because, you know, he's like you just can't go against him. But matter of fact, I told Mike Smith after we were joking, I said, he rode Justify. He says, Mike, you didn't get Justify out of the game. What happened? And he says, don't you remember? You fired me. I didn't write And so, but it was sort of, you know what? It was, you know, it was a little hokey, but what are you going to do? You know,
that was
at
fun.
The time, it was fun.
Right. Let me tell you this. We don't have about a couple of minutes left. So about 25 years ago, I think it was, I spent some time with your parents. What great, your dad was a cut up. Now I know where you got your humor from, but your dad and your mom were fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, my dad, he was a character. And, actually, my brother Bill, he's the funniest.
Yes, guy. Yes.
Your brother Bill's a lot funnier than you, Bob. I said, no, he is. But they were great, and I just, you know, I wish they could have been there for American Pharaoh. That's the only thing I was thinking about them the whole time, that they weren't there for the Triple Crown. They were there for those other races, and I didn't get to really. And I figured, you know, they were up there watching. They were bringing them on, but I'm glad that I got to enjoy my horse racing with them. They were at the derbies, the big races, and you know, they just really enjoyed it all.
Bob, we appreciate your time. Thanks a bunch. This was a lot of fun.
Guys, call me anytime, and don't forget, if you need some reality, horse.
All right, we'll give him a call.
Nadal, I got Nadal winning it all. Here we go.
Nadal's the horse. He's tough.
Yes.
Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Pleasure
appreciate
to meet
it.
You.
Got it.
Great. Thank you. That was Bob Baffert, the great Bob Baffert here on 1030 The Voice. Let's take a quick break and finish off this segment here on Thursday.
Make the switch. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer customized solutions and get you what you need faster. Like our quick and easy credit cards and auto loans. All done online from start to finish. Save time using mobile banking, bill pay, mobile deposit, and mobile pay with just a few clicks. Live large accessing 30,000 plus surcharge-free ATMs and free debit card choices. Make the switch to Hughes today. Visit HughesFCU.org/switch. Certain restrictions apply, insured by NCUA.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice alongside Jay Gonzalez. I'm Steve Rivera. That was a lot of fun for me.
That was a ton of fun. I love talking to him. That was, you know, he said, again, just another one of those guys.
Right.
He's just, you know, top of the game, you know, as good as you can get, and then kind of just regular guy.
He's the guy that, and you know these guys because you hang around with them and you're one of them. You're at a bar in Tucson somewhere. Come on, sit with us. And then you just tell stories all night.
Exactly. I love those guys. I could see myself having a beer with him and just sitting there and talking about the horse races and stuff like that. And That was a ton of fun.
Let me tell you, be prepared for getting name called. You know how the, you know when you're with your good friends, and they just, hey, Peanut, hey, you know, Pepe, blah blah, and then you fight with each other, and then, hey, let's do this again tomorrow.
Yeah, that was so cool. That was so cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's why. No, you just gotta keep your eye on these horses.
Well, you know, I'm gonna take a look now and see what we got, and get a chance to make some bets on some of his horses. I'm glad we're going to have these races. I always figure out a way to bet the Triple Crown races. So we'll keep an eye on what he's got, and he sounds pretty confident.
Yeah, but be prepared. Like I told you, I think yesterday, the day before, they're a little chalky because everybody's got a ball there for that.
I mean, you go to Santa Anita, you go to Del Mar, and you start looking at the program, and you just bet on a Baffert horse every time, no matter what, and you just always do. And the rare times that I've been able to do that, I do look for the Baffert horses. and so that's what you do. It's like, okay, I'm going to take the Yankees, I'm going to take the Dodgers or whatever, you know. You take the chalk because you want to win.
Back in, I have the thing up, I had it up before, War Emblem was, I think, in the 2000s, and it was his horse. He was a long shot 20 years ago. It was the war. It was the mid. I'm thinking, he has no chance. And he pulls it off. I'm thinking, God was giving me a sign. And I didn't, he said, God just gave me a sign. Well, he was giving me a sign and I just ignored it.
Well, one of my great stories is a time that we went to Santa Anita and I was with my brothers. My brother Ed, who we mentioned, had seen American Pharoah at Del Mar. We're at Santa Anita and Willie Shoemaker was running. And my brother said, I got to bet on Willie the Shoe. Got to bet on Willie the Shoe. And he put all his money on Willie the Shoe, and they broke, and Willie the Shoe was nowhere to be found.
Willie lost his shoe.
He came by so late. The horse finished last by I don't know how much, and my brother's like, why hasn't he retired? He needs to retire.
So the horse
I don't even know who the horse was, but he was so upset that he had this chance to bet on Willie Shoemaker.
The horse was dinner after
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And Willie the Shoe came in last, and so he was calling for his retirement after that.
Yeah, right.
One of the great stories, one of our great horse racing stories.
Yeah, so it's going to be soon, in reverse order almost?
In reverse order, yeah, June 20th. That's not that far away. I think that's going to be right after PGA Tour gets going, so stuff is going to start happening. Now, there aren't going to be any fans at this race, and those tracks hold 100,000 people, so that's going to be a little different, but, we'll be able to watch it, we'll be able to bet on it, and it'll be fun to get that thing started. And you know what? I don't think anybody in horse racing really cares about, is there going to be an asterisk if somebody wins a Triple Crown or whatever. Like Bob said, they're just happy to be racing.
Sure.
They're just going to be happy to be racing.
There's a bunch of degenerates out there.
Well, they are. They are. And, we are that as well.
Right. So let me tell you, you talked about your brother's tickets and stuff. After Justify had won his thing, Billy helped me. I had two winning tickets, $2 win tickets on Pharoah or Justify. I said, Billy, can you have him sign these for me? I'm not going to cash them, and I have them in my drawer.
Oh, that's so cool.
So they're worth more than $2 to me.
That's so cool. That is so cool. Yeah, like I said, my brother brought his stuff home, and he had this ticket, and it wasn't a winning ticket, but it was a $10 Quinella. But after the Triple Crown, he brought that stuff to me right away, and I made him one of those frames with the three slots, and he's got it up in his house, and he talks about it all the time. And it's if you're a sports fan, mm-hmm. and something like that happens, you want whatever little piece of that you have. I've the only thing I've got like that is that in the same calendar year I covered the 88 Final Four, and then I covered the national championship football game that was played up at the Fiesta Bowl. It was mm-hmm. Notre Dame and West Virginia, and I framed my two press passes together in a frame, and I had that hanging in my office for the longest time. It's just, when you're a part of something big, some sort of sports history like that, when you're not involved in it all the time and it's not a regular thing, you like having something like that to remember that by.
No question. I was just going to ask you, I have a lot of crap like that. A lot of people would say that. Do you have signed stuff? And when people get them signed, they kind of talk about it. Well, I can sell it for this, blah, blah, blah. To me, like those little tickets, they're priceless.
Right, you'll never sign them. I've got a couple of things. One, I've got the year after the Diamondbacks won the World Series, I played in a Diamondbacks spring training golf tournament. Mm-hmm. And as one of the tee gifts was they gave us a baseball, a Major League Baseball, with the World Series logo on it. I don't know if those were the baseballs they were using, but it sure looked like one. Mm-hmm. And I, after the tournament was over, I went and got Luis Gonzalez mm-hmm. to sign it. And that's the only signature I got of it. And this one, I told you about my Fernando ball where the signature faded. This one I put in a case so that the signature would never go away. And I've got it.
Right.
I didn't get it stamped. I'm not going to have it validated.
You know, that's, you got it.
That baby's mine.
Right, right.
And then the other thing I have, and it's something that I did for my son, Adam, when we went to the 97 Final Four, I got one of my tickets signed by John Wooden. It turned out it was really funny. My seats were better than John Wooden's. I was like,
that's part of the story.
I'm in the tall cotton.
That's
now,
part
right?
of the story.
So between games, I saw him up there. Nobody was bothering me, just kind of sitting there. So I went up and asked him to sign the ticket and to write "To Adam" on the back of the ticket. Mm-hmm. And so that I put in a frame with a picture of us at the Final Four with the ticket showing John Wooden's signature, and then the pin, you know, the Final Four pin. That's in a frame, you know, that belongs to my son, you know. And he was there. I mean, he was like four years old.
Yeah.
He was about to turn 4 years old. So he was still pretty young, but I asked him the other day if he's got any memories of that. He said, I kind of remember being there, but I don't really remember much.
You're talking to some old guy.
Yeah. So, but he's got that, and you know, there's a picture of him in there, so he knows. So those are really two, you know, pieces of memorabilia. I keep all of my press passes.
Yes, so do I.
I've got them all hanging.
Me too.
Off of a bulletin board, and it's a stack of them.
Yeah.
It's all press passes except the two tickets to a thing that I did last year, was going to the U.S. Open with my son at Pebble Beach. I got my Pebble Beach tickets there.
Very cool. Very cool. I know. I don't get it how people have them signed and they sell them. They mean more to me.
I've never bought anything like that.
Yeah, me too.
I've never bought anything like that.
Good show today. Great show today.
Another fun show.
You better have fun tomorrow.
All right. Well, we'll be here with Anthony Jimeno tomorrow. We'll be talking college football all day long.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Had a great time today on 1030 The Voice.